Thank you, Helen. So, as Helen said, I want to talk a little bit about the pros and cons of tax devolution. So what are the rationales for devolving taxes, and what are the risks and challenges involved with devolution? And then how do these play out differently for different types of taxes? And then we'll talk a little bit about how unequal are tax bases across the UK, how volatile are certain taxes, and what could that mean for devolution? So, looking first at the rationales for devolution, well, the kind of first kind of classic rationale given in the economics literature is that having devolved taxes allows devolved local governments to vary the level and structure of taxes to reflect differences in local needs or local preferences. So if you want better quality public services, you can set higher tax rates. If you have control of the number of taxes, you can change the tax mix, perhaps lower income taxes, higher property taxes. On the other hand, if you don't have tax devolution, you have little control over the budget at the local level. And if you have a very narrow local tax base, you can have what's called a gearing problem. You need quite big increases in that small, narrow tax base to generate a sizable increase in local spending power. So you have not much control at the margin of what you spend. Related to this, the argument is that devolving taxes can improve the accountability of local government to citizens. If you have a local government that has tax powers, they have to justify those taxes and the outcomes they deliver to local residents. In fact, if they're funded by grants, they might be more prone to lobbying central government or blaming central government for their funding difficulties. Related to this, the idea that tax devolution can improve the financial incentives for local areas to boost economic growth. If your budgets go up or down as your tax revenues go up and down, you have an incentive to boost the underlying tax base to improve economic performance. It can also help align the incentives that local governments face when it comes to the spending side of the budget. So if you invest in infrastructure or invest in skills that boost the local economy, if you get to capture some of the returns on that in terms of extra tax revenues, you might be more willing to invest and see yourself reap some of those gains. When we look at the empirical evidence, there is evidence that tax devolution is associated with stronger economic performance. Now, it's not outstanding evidence, as Neil will say in a little while, but there is evidence that actually, in countries that have greater devolution, there is somewhat faster economic growth. What about the challenges and the risks? Well, one of the interests of people here will obviously be the administration, enforcement, and compliance costs associated with devolution. Devolved governments or local governments will need to have expertise to make policy at a local level, and that might not always exist. We've seen that with things like devolved council tax benefit, difficulties designing local systems sometimes. You also need to be able to split up tax bases between local areas. You should apportion the incomes or the profits or the sales to different local areas, which can be challenging. Differences in tax policies can distort taxpayer behaviour. You can see migration of high earners into areas with lower taxes. You could see people shopping around, doing their shopping in areas that set a lower sales tax rate. Companies shifting their profits into areas that set a lower corporate tax rate. And that can all mean potential tax competition. And that tax competition could reduce revenues by different areas trying to compete to set lower tax rates, to bring in mobile investment, to bring in mobile people. And the evidence here suggests that disparities, and there can also be disparities in tax bases between areas as well. So, for instance, some areas might have strong economies, big tax bases. When you devolve more responsibility to local areas to raise revenues, that can mean differences in their spending powers, which might need to engage in fiscal equalization to offset. Now, if you do fiscal equalization, what you do is you take revenues from areas that have bigger tax bases, that have lower spending needs, and give those to areas that have smaller tax bases and higher spending needs. That can reduce disparities, but the evidence here is that whilst devolution can boost growth, and it can actually reduce inequalities in economic output between areas, it can increase disparities, inequalities in incomes between areas, and in the level and quality of public services between areas. So thinking about this tax by tax, these play out in different ways for different taxes. So economists usually think of property taxes as being the best tax to devolve, followed by personal income taxes, and value-added and corporate taxes being more difficult to devolve. So why is that? Well, first of all, with property taxes, administratively, it's somewhat more straightforward to devolve this kind of tax. We know where the location of property is. It's less mobile, so there's less chance for there to be mobility or behavioral response when you have tax changes and tax differences across areas. And if you do have responses, one of the key responses is likely to be changes in prices. So rather than it changing behavior significantly, what will happen is if taxes are higher in one area than the other, property prices will be lower in that area. So you'll get capitalization of the tax into property prices, which tends to reduce the economic distortions you would get from the tax. Personal income taxes, well, again, should be administratively feasible. HMRC supposedly knows where we live. Our employers should know where we live. Now, there could be issues with second homes, and that maybe is a reason in Scotland why there were some issues around identifying what the size of the Scottish tax base would be before devolution. But at least in principle, we should know where the tax base is located. Income tax devolution also gives broad incentives to boost incomes, not just in terms of boosting the local economy, not just more jobs in the local area, more properties, more business in the local area, but actually broader incentives too. So, for instance, if people were to get jobs in neighbouring areas, to commute in to get higher value jobs elsewhere. But of course, income tax is more subject to behavioural response than property taxes. Rich individuals in particular can be mobile, and they can engage in avoidance behaviour, and that's particularly likely if only part of a tax is devolved and not a full tax base. So again, Joe might say about this in Scotland, where they've devolved income tax on non-savings and non-dividends income, but savings and dividends income remains a central tax, and there can be scope for avoidance behaviour if you have different tax rules then on these different parts of the tax base. Turning to value-added tax, but again, that can give you quite broad incentives to boost local economic activity, but we're now coming to taxes that are more difficult to administer at a local level. So, for instance, with value-added tax, you might need to operate one of two different kinds of systems at a local level. The first would be to treat county borders or local borders a bit like an international border. Companies would have to split up their value added into the parts that are in the different jurisdictions making up a country. So they'd have to split up the value added that's done in the headquarters, that's done in the warehouses, that's done in the stores. And you can see the difficulties in administering that and also enforcing that. You might have zero rates like you do with exports, and then companies then charging VAT when they import it into the neighbouring areas. Alternatively, you could have a system like American sales tax, where you don't have that charging at each stage like with VAT, but it's only a tax levied at the final level for retailers. But then you need to distinguish between, is it a retailer buyer, so a customer buying, a consumer buying the product, or is it a business buying the product? And again, you have administrative difficulties around that issue and potential for avoidance and evasion there. And of course, sales are more mobile than people as well. So more scope for behavioural response, shopping around. And we see that in the US, for instance, where you often have cities charging higher tax rates than surrounding county areas, and those county areas having the malls as people try to take advantage of the lower tax rates. And of course, corporate tax has similar issues in terms of complexity as well. You need to have borders between your different local authorities or different areas having devolved taxes. Do they operate like an international system where you have transfer pricing? Or do you try what they do in the US or Germany? We have formula apportionment. You use a formula to allocate taxes based on sales or based on business headcount or based on capital in different areas. So where do we go from here in the UK? We've had a little look at the kind of list of taxes in order of, you know, easy devolution. Well, that might suggest that we should look at property tax if you wanted further devolution. And one of the ones that's got a lot of attention from the local government is stamp duty. I can say quickly, I think stamp duty is a bad idea to devolve in the UK. This map shows stamp duty revenues around the country, where the dark green is with the highest revenues, and the light white colours the lowest revenues. And one in five council areas, stamp duty revenues are less than £70 per head. another one in five councillors, they more than £277 per head. So a very unequally distributed tax base. It's higher in London and surrounding areas, lower in the northwest, northeast, and in South Yorkshire in particular. And what this means is you'd need quite big redistribution between different parts of the country if you wanted to devolve this and not lead to very large disparities in local revenues. Stamp duty is also quite volatile as well. This graph shows what happened to stamp duty revenues during the Great Recession and thereafter for London and the northeast of England. And you can see stamp duty revenues fell substantially, they more than halved during the recession. They've come back up, but a very volatile tax base for local authorities to manage, much more volatile than their current tax bases. And you see that at a local level as well. This graph shows the same pattern for someone like Manchester, Nottingham and Gloucester. And what you can see here is that actually, someone like Nottingham, the kind of turquoise line, stamp duty revenues have not grown at all since 2010. Whereas Manchester, the green line, they've more than doubled in that same time period. So again, quite divergent trends in different revenues at a local level. Some of that could be under council's control. Some of that could be for things outside council's control. And again, that could lead to quite different revenues for local areas affecting their performance. I'll end now with income tax. Income tax is going to hear a lot less about in the UK debate about devolution. And again, it is quite unequally distributed around the country. In one in four council areas, income tax revenues per worker are less than 3,800. In other one in four areas, it's more than 6,200. So smaller kind of relative differences than for stamp duty, but bigger absolute differences. Income tax is going to be higher in London and in the M3, M4, M11 corridors, and it's actually higher in suburbs and cities where kind of richer kind of people live. But I actually think income tax is probably the next best option if you want to devolve a further tax. Of the big taxes, it's the one that's got the most scope for devolution. Why is that? Well, it's paid by local residents, so there's a connection to the local services. You can assign tax bases to local areas. I said, HMRC knows where we live, so do our employers. People are less mobile than profits and retail sales, so it's a better option than local corporate tax or local sales tax. It provides broad incentives, as I said, to boost incomes and the employment of residents. And you can make it less unequally distributed and less prone to tax competition if you don't devolve the tax in full. So I show there are big differences in tax bases around the country. Part of that is because you have a very progressive tax system, and that raises a lot from the richest individuals. But actually, you wouldn't need to necessarily devolve the tax in full. You could devolve it partially. And if you were to devolve only a small part of the income tax, say 3p in each income tax band, or say you only devolve the basic rate and higher rate, you didn't devolve the very top rate, it'd be a lot less unequally distributed around the country, and be less subject to that kind of behavioral response at the top end of the distribution. So my question is there an appetite for income tax devolution in addition to the current powers that councils have over council tax and business rates? Thanks.
Great, thanks, David.
Sorry, I went way over. Hi, so my name's Neil Lee. I'm from the London School of Economics. It's a great pleasure to be here. I'm assuming I was invited because Tony Travers was busy. But it's really nice. So I teach a master's course where we do an entire unit on this question. And we cover it in a basically 12 hours of lectures. So what I've done is tried to synthesize those 12 hours plus 4 hours of student presentations into 10 minutes. So apologies if this is a little bit sort of rough. But as David has suggested, you know, what I'm going to be talking about today is I'm going to essentially be giving you a picture of what the aggregate, what the broader economic literature says about fiscal devolution or fiscal decentralization of various forms. And I think David made this very clear, right? There are, one of the things about fiscal decentralization is it's not clearly going to be a good thing. You know, I like to talk about theory because I'm an academic. There are lots of reasons why fiscal decentralization or fiscal devolution would be a positive thing, creating incentives, making it clear what the responsibilities and accountabilities are. One of the things the literature talks about a lot is the idea that, you know, it can help you target taxation according to local preferences. There's lots of reasons why it might be a good thing, but there's also a big list of reasons why fiscal decentralization can be bad. Much of the literature here comes from the developing world, so we talk about corruption, less of an issue here, hopefully. But one of the main issues here is zero-sum competition. So when we have had, where we have countries with high levels of fiscal decentralization, Brazil or the United States, then one of the things we've seen is local authorities essentially bidding down taxes to attract mobile investment. And if this is simply moving the new headquarters of Amazon around the country, everyone loses out apart from Amazon. So essentially what happens if you have too much fiscal decentralization is you give too much power to the corporates. And we can see a lot of the sort of evidence of this in the literature. Then the other thing which I think wasn't really spoken about is the sort of Matthew effect. Essentially, when you have places which have large incomes, then they are able to increase that more. It's essentially a sort of theory of cumulative advantage. And because of this, because of all these factors here, essentially you end up with this situation where we really don't know what's going to happen. There's no sort of clear sort of theoretical prior here. And two things just to sort of highlight here. First is that, the consequences of getting fiscal decentralization wrong can be quite severe, and they can be felt by innocent people, and often by the people who are not particularly mobile. The US is a great example of this, where we see hollowed out towns in, essentially with very little tax base, and if that tax base is used to provide welfare support for local people, that can be a really sort of difficult problem. And of course, and I will come back to this because I think this is absolutely crucial, the other problem you have is that the capacity of local government is related to their their tax base. And that's really problematic. But luckily, we're not the first country to explore fiscal devolution or fiscal decentralization. There's been this global trend. My colleague Andres Rodriguez-Pose coined this very nice term, the global trend to devolution, going right back to the 1970s. So we have a lot of evidence. And I'll be honest, most of this evidence was initially quite negative. It suggested that fiscal devolution in some form was not going to be helping out lagging regions or lagging places. So, this is, one of the things I like to say is that you should never trust a single academic study unless it's one of mine. But this is a graph taken from a meta-analysis, and you don't need to worry about that too much. But essentially, what it shows you is the relationship between decentralization and aggregate national economic growth. So this is zero, this is negative, this is positive. And basically what this tells you is that there are a few studies which suggest that you decentralize, it has these terrible negative effects, a few which suggest you have sort of terrible, nice positive effects. But most of the studies, they basically say you decentralize, it might be good or bad, it's not going to be that good or that bad, basically. And the answer, the thing this leads me onto, is that we don't really know the overall effect on growth. But one thing we do know, and which has become clearer in the literature recently, comes from studies looking at which parts of the country grow. And this surprised me, but there's a number of recent studies, and these are the very good recent studies, which suggest that actually the places fiscal devolution helps are the lagging regions. So it's not that if you devolve, if you have fiscal devolution, there are places which are already doing well. It's not this Matthew effect I talked about a moment ago. What instead you see is that fiscal devolution helps raise growth in lagging regions. And the main explanation for why this might be the case is because, in the current, in a system like we have in the UK, if you're running the local authority of, say, if you're running Newcastle and Gateshead, you get a load of money for a festival from national government. You basically just have to take it and spend it under whatever terms national government gives you. And, it's really a sort of the only game in town. Of course, if you are raising your own money locally, you will think a little bit more carefully about how you use it. And you maybe use it in a sort of better fashion. So that's the sort of what I would say is the balance of the evidence of recent studies. And there's been some really nice studies on this. If anyone's interested in the minutiae of these studies, I'm really happy to talk about it afterwards for quite a long time, for 12 hours. So, if you can have a sort of, there can be a sort of positive effect where fiscal devolution can help regions which are doing less well. But there is a big caveat, and this is the caveat. This is from my, I'm sorry, I've labeled this as from another study where they looked at government quality and the effect of decentralization on regional inequality at different levels of government quality. And where you have good government, it reduces regional inequality. Where you have less good local government, fiscal decentralization increases regional inequality. And the caveat here is that you need to have high quality local government for fiscal devolution to make an impact. So, coming to the sort of answer to this question. So given what I've just given you, and you know, given that, you know, if you want to hear more, you can always apply for our master's degree in local economic development, a bargain at £17,000 a year. So what's, you know, basically my sort of, what I would suggest is, you know, on the balance of the evidence, it's probably not going to do that much harm, provided you have some sort of sensible civil service who design transfers in a sensible way. We're not likely to end up with a sort of UK Detroit type situation. But there are two really, really important conditions to successful fiscal decentralization. Now, the first of these is when we have successful examples of fiscal decentralization. So some of the processes which have been, you know, so decentralization, fiscal decentralization, we should talk about it as a process rather than a sort of end state. You know, because it's something which is always going to sort of change over time. But if you look at good examples, such as what they've had in the Netherlands over the last sort of 30 years, you know, one of the key lessons there is that the capacity of local government matters. And I said that I would be a little bit controversial, and so this is hopefully at least slightly controversial. My, you know, I think the West Midlands Combined Authority probably fine, Manchester probably fine. I think large parts of the local government in this country are not up to the task, and it's not their fault, it's the fault of national government, because they've essentially, you know, restricted them to statutory bodies, to statutory duties. There's been far less strategic capacity than there needs to be. And I really worry. I think if we were having the same conversation 7 years ago, I would have said, oh, you know, fiscal decentralization is probably, you know, not going to do too much harm. It's not too bad a thing. But actually, I was looking at the data. We have reasonable data on quality of local government. The UK used to be in the sort of top tier of quality of local government, like, you know, alongside sort of Sweden and countries like that. I just looked at the latest data, and we're closer to the sort of Belgians in that second group. We're not bad, but we're not nearly as good as we used to be. And I think that's really problematic if we're thinking about capacity. And the second point I'm probably going to be a bit controversial on is that you need to have strong public support for decentralization. You know, this is real sort of lesson. When we looked at, you know, if you look at Scotland, there is strong public support for the SNP, I guess, or, you know, the Scottish Assembly. You know, they're relatively recognisable, they're accountable. We might have that with some of the mayors, but I would guess that 90%, 95% of people in this country, they probably don't know who their leader of the local authority is. They don't really care. They don't want to be particularly involved. And the problem here is that when you don't have people who are engaged in local policymaking, then many of the processes, the positive processes, they're simply not going to sort of, they're not going to happen. And just to conclude, the other thing about fiscal decentralization, and this is, you know, I've been working in policy for about 15 years. I used to work in one of these buildings a long time ago, and I remember saying that, you know, if we couldn't think of a, so, you know, when you'd write a nice research report, a report which would hopefully land on the minister's desk, and you'd write it and you'd think, what on earth can we have as a policy recommendation? And the answer was always, well, if you can't think of anything, just say decentralize it, because that's a sort of, you know, nice, you know, generic policy solution. And we came to see that as something of a sort of panacea. You know, if you can't think of what to do, just say local areas will sort it out. I think there's a real danger with the discussion about fiscal decentralization that basically you just say, well, what we're going to do is just, you know, never mind austerity, I don't need to get industrial strategy right, we're just going to get some poor local authority officer in Stoke who's, you know, found that his budget's been cut by 50% over the last 5 years, we're just going to get him or her to sort it out. And I don't think that's good enough. So we need to be very, you know, we need to be clear that, you know, fiscal decentralization, it might be a help, probably not going to be too much of a hindrance if we get things right, but it's certainly not a panacea.
Great, thank you.